Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Martin Luther King commemoration will take place this weekend with a variety of events to remember Dr. King's vision, but also with a wider purpose this year to engage the community in an effort to support, rebuild, and heal the relationships between law enforcement and the African-American community. Tulsa was not immune to the national wave of fatal encounters between police and blacks this past year, and new national studies from the Pew Research Center has noted disconnects between the police and the public on the impact and influence of these incidents. Couple that with studies showing wide disconnects on Americans' perception on the state of racial equality. It seems trite to say much work remains to be done. To that end, the celebration will get underway with a solidarity walk titled Love Conquers Hate on Sunday, which will feature law enforcement, clergy, elected officials, and community groups that both commemoration organizers and law enforcement hope will be a catalyst to continue to rebuild the relationships. To talk about that and all the events of the commemoration is the Martin Luther King Commemoration Chairperson, Rebecca Marks-Jimerson, and Jonathan Brooks, the Deputy Police Chief of the Tulsa Police Department, to talk about the events scheduled for Sunday and Monday. Rebecca Marks-Jimerson and Deputy Chief Brooks, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you, Rich, for having us here this morning.
You know, as we come into the Martin Luther King commemoration this weekend, given everything that has taken place, not only in our community, but all across the country regarding racial justice, perceived and actual racial injustice, why is the commemoration especially important this year?
Our world is so polarized. When we look at the Tulsa community, and we know that there have been issues that have happened, but it's so important because we're embarking upon a bigger racial divide than ever, and fear. I think that fear factor is really what's going into effect right now. And so our president, Dr. Pledge Thompson, has said, we need to reach out and let's look at some issues that Tulsa's having right now because we don't want to go backwards. And that is the fear right now, Rich, that a lot of African-Americans are having in light of the changing of the guard and the presidency is that there's a fear factor going on.
And it's interesting because the attitudes between whites and blacks on this whole issue, there's a big disconnect.
Yes.
Because you look at African-American attitudes towards the Obama presidency, for example, and they look at that as a positive sign. And you look at a substantial percentage of whites, they look at what he said about race as being actually detrimental to race.
Yes.
To race relations.
Right. And you know, we are going to, at some point, we're going to have to move past that. And that's where working together, and as Pledge Thompson said, that's why we have to take the forefront with the commemoration this year with Martin Luther King, his ideology of peace. I mean, let's create peace in spite of what's going on around us. And I think because he was a theologian and he was far advanced, his thinking on bringing people together, that's why I think this year we are really focusing on bringing together our law enforcement, because that has been an issue. And Pledge sat down with Deputy Brooks and the chief to talk about, you know, let's bridge this divide because we can rebuild and we can heal. And it's almost like what has happened in the changing of the guard and as the president has magnified the fear even greater.
Well, let me bring in Deputy Chief Brooks. I know your department was very proactive given the events of this summer with the fatal encounter between police and a member of our African-American community. And you actually did a lot of reach out during that fall. What have you learned? What has the police learned from all of that reach out that took place in the wake of the Crutcher shooting?
Well, the short answer is what I've learned is we have a lot of work to do. But we have worked in the community to try to, I don't want to say establish relationships, but reestablish relationships, because the core component of the police department and the community working together in a community policing is collaboration, right? So to have effective collaboration, you merely first start with a relationship. And so that's the predominant thing that we've been working with the community on. And when we worked with Ples Thompson and Rebecca and many other leaders of our community, I have to say this. I am truly just honored to be here right now, to be even have the opportunity to even talk about this Martin Luther King event. And I'm honored that the community wants to do this unity walk. Because if you look across the country of all the polarizing events, but then you let's focus in and look at Tulsa for just a minute. What happened in Tulsa? Tulsa was the one unique example across this entire United States of how it was handled differently. It wasn't because of what the police department did. It was because of what our community did, and it was done together. So when we come together to work on problems or these disparities or and we work collaboratively, we have a different outcome. And so that's what we want to continue to do here in Tulsa, is to continue to build on that. Tulsa to be the shining lighthouse across the United States. So, hey, what is going on there? Because they're different. I mean, Rich, you've seen the headlines across the country. I remember one specifically that says, you know, Baltimore burns and Tulsa prays. You know, you look at the things that happen here is significantly different.
Of course, you have seen a significant uptick in activism within the community. There have been a variety of groups. I know throughout the summer, if you were downtown, you saw Black Lives Matter marches nearly every week within the Brady District and other places. Has that been a net contributor overall?
I think it has, because it goes with the American dream of free speech. And the fact that Deputy Chief Brooks has met, we have actually met, and I'm engaging in taking him around to the community, working with the ministers, working with what we call the OGs, original gangsters, yeah. Going from the grassroots to whatever, and engaging and rebuilding, because there is a fear. And basically it's a fear that when they see and engage with Deputy Brooks about, hey, I mean, you know, you really care about what we're doing over here. You want to be a part. And that's what I think makes us different than what's going on across the nation.
We want to talk about the Martin Luther King commemoration, but I have to give credit to the Tulsa Police Department in the wake of when you saw these sort of impromptu protests that popped up in various sectors of downtown. To contrast that with Baton Rouge, for example, where you had people exercising their First Amendment rights, but they were also blocking traffic. They were marching through the streets. And our police department said, hey, everybody can just slow down while they march down the street, as opposed to someplace where Baton Rouge, where it's like, you're blocking the street. We're going to take you into custody because you're breaking the law. And I think that was a very smart tactic on the part of the police department.
Well, that's one thing I did want to chime in and say. We took a unique approach to the protests. We would meet with them. And this goes back to collaboration, because we are here to protect your right to peacefully protest. And we help facilitate a forum for people to be heard. That's part of our job. You know, you hear the word protest or march. Sometimes even that itself brings a connotation of fear among any population because they don't want it in their streets or in their backyard. But when we work with them and establish a means for them to be heard, that was our approach. And it worked very well for Tulsa. In fact, all the protesters were very appreciative because we're there to protect their rights as well.
Well, let's talk about this walk that's going to kick off the commemoration. Now, you said this is going to have full participation of the police department. How's this working? How's this walk working?
It came about, Rich, that Ples Thompson met with State Senator Kevin Matthews and myself, and we said, what can we do to engage our law enforcement? And so we brought Brooks in, and he says, hey, I'm all in, because this is what we want to do. We want to rebuild. We want to engage. So it's going to take place Sunday, January 15th at 5 p.m. It's called the Love Conquers Hate Walk of Peace and Solidarity, and it's going to be led by law enforcement. And the whole purpose is to rebuild those relationships, to show that we are all working together and we are here for each other. Because, Brooks, you kind of alluded to that. You are here to protect and serve and going out into the community. And they talked about community policing. And I know you always like to hear their definition. They said, we want you to help us to protect our community.
Yeah. So is the police department on board with this as far as
fully participating? Uh-huh. This falls right in line with all the work we've done. And now we're just going to display publicly in this unity walk some of the work that we've done and show the support for each other. I understand that this is a support for law enforcement, but this is a two-way street because this is showing the law enforcement support for our community. And so we are definitely all in on this, showing our support for the community that we serve because that's why we're here.
So will it be sort of a arm-in-arm linking sort of thing walking down from 7th and Cincinnati all the way down to Boston Avenue?
And we will sing the traditional We Shall Overcome. The State Representative Regina Goodwin and Monroe Nichols, the NAACP, the Christian ministers. We will have representatives from community groups, from the schools, everyone. We're hoping to have a choir, the Voices of Unity, to carry it out a cappella for us as we're walking along with Reverend Goss from Morningstar Baptist Church.
And that leads right into the next major event of Martin Luther King, which is always traditionally, it seems like it's always traditionally been at Boston Avenue Methodist.
It has, and they graciously always open their doors. It's the Interfaith Commemorative Service that will start at 6 p.m. Our keynote speaker is Dr. Goss from Morningstar Baptist Church. And we will have something different. We will have community remarks this year, Rich, from community organizations that are engaged in what we're doing. Toby Jenkins from the Equality Center, Moses Echevarra from OCCJ, Compassionate Tulsa, Dr. Andrea Walker, to give remarks about how important this is. And I think that was important, especially in this year as we embark upon our new president, to show that we're all unified.
All right. My guest today is Rebecca Marks Jimerson, who is the Martin Luther King Commemoration Chairperson, and Jonathan Brooks, the Deputy Chief of the Tulsa Police Department, who are fully participating in this year's MLK Commemoration, which takes place this weekend with events scheduled for Sunday and then again on Monday. So we haven't even got to Monday yet. So Monday is the big parade.
Right.
And this parade seems to have gotten larger and larger from year to year. I remember a day when we just didn't, Tulsa has this tradition of doing old parades, and then there was like nobody ever went to parades, and then all of a sudden the parades are getting bigger. We have the largest Veterans Day parade, and we have one of the bigger Martin Luther
King. The second largest MLK parade. The first largest is Houston, Texas. So we are the second. We have entries as far as Houston, Texas. They actually come here, even though they give prizes. And so we're thinking about giving prizes next year. But Wichita, Kansas, we have entries that come from all over. And this year, we are once again going to highlight our bands. We have 15 bands. One of them, Booker T. Washington High School, will be a part of it. And the Grand Marshal will be Cecilia Blades, and she is the wife of the late Marvin Blades. So we're excited about that. That's 11 a.m. And it will start at MLK and John Hope Franklin Boulevard. So and once again, we're going to have a high presence of law enforcement walking. And I think, I mean, you guys are all in this year, Brooks. I mean, you are helping the MLK out great with security, everything. Thank you so much.
Yes, well, we're glad to be there. We've participated in the Martin Luther King Parade for many years, and this year is just a little bit more special than the others. And I'm sure we'll say the same thing next year, but this year with so many things that's gone on in the community and so much work that's been done, it's a time to really look back and celebrate some of the positive things that we've done. And along with this Unity Walk and then the parade and celebrating the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King and all the work he did.
Well, what would you say some of the positive things that have occurred this year? Is it in reaction to what has occurred during the year?
Some of it's reactionary, yes, indeed, and some of it we've been working on all along. As we look at policing in the 21st century and under President Obama's initiative, I don't know if you know, but Chief Dorden and I was lucky enough to be involved and went to D.C. and met on this commission that was established for the United States. And a lot of tenets came out of that program. And since that visit, the last visit in August, we've implemented a lot of those, some of those items. I don't know if you've follow the news, but yesterday we just kicked off our Project Trust. It's about police working with youth in schools, and then the police also working in communities that that are disproportionate or susceptible to crime. So we look at those, but I think the big success, one of the things that we want to really talk about, and with the help of Rebecca, is, and I'll go back to what we really started this conversation about, is reestablishing relationships. Because you can't have a partnership, you can't have trust unless you have a relationship. Mm-hmm. And that's the foundation of everything that we have to do in terms of the police department.
Is this the next step? I mean, obviously you're participating fully in the MLK commemoration, but what's the next step beyond that? I mean, the engagement is a process.
Absolutely. There is no finish line in this particular endeavor. It is a continual march because every day things change, society changes. So we have to in terms of the police department, we have to remain vigilant and on our toes to serve the community. And that means sometimes we may change according to what the needs of the public are.
Yeah. My guests today are Jonathan Brooks, the Deputy Chief of the Tulsa Police Department, and Rebecca Marks Jimerson, the Martin Luther King Commemoration Chairperson, talking about the commemoration events. And Rebecca was just holding up a flyer for the final event, which is Monday evening. It'll take place at the Oklahoma Jazz Hall of Fame. It's going to be an amazing gospel event.
Yes, it's a tribute, Rich, to our gospel quartet singers, and it's called Let Freedom Ring. Let Freedom Sing. And the Reverend Alan Russell and myself will be emceeing it. And once again, music. Music is so healing. And so we always like to conclude with a gospel tribute in music, because this brings so many people across religions together that night, and a big crowd. I mean, Rabbi Daniel Kamen, he says, oh, I want to come by and see what's going on. We get so many people who say, yes, there are differences, but hey, when it comes to music, we're all in.
And I want to ask, and I know this is the case, that this is really open to everyone.
It's
so everyone
open.
Should
yes.
never feel like, you know, I'm. This is not. You
and
know,
it's not an African American thing, because so many times it's just like when I talk about Juneteenth. Hey, this is a human rights thing. I mean, if you look at the ideology of Dr. Martin Luther King, he was for the rights of everyone. And I had a 95-year-old friend of mine who I didn't know he knew about it. And he's a World War II vet, and he's white. And he, you know him, Frank Lowry. He says, I want to be a part of the parade, and I'm coming to the gospel singing. He's from Henrietta. Uh-huh. But he says, I want to be a part of this because I know that this is not an African-American thing. This is for all people.
It's American thing.
It's as Americana and freedom as you can get.
Yeah. I hope a lot of people do come out this
Thank
weekend.
You, yes.
And I want to ask one last question. You know, we always, I know one of the events will feature the kids that learn the I Have a Dream speech.
Yes.
And, you know, given this last year, you know, I was reading a Pew research study. This was actually on the perception of racial equality, where we were between whites and blacks. And, you know, 40% of whites think we will eventually get there. 38% of whites think we already have got there. 42% of blacks think we will eventually get to this point of racial equality. But unfortunately, 43% of blacks think we will never get there. And maybe 10% of whites. Where do both of you think we are on that continuum towards true racial equality?
I'll address it first. As an African American, I think it's a mindset that at some point we continually will have adverse situations and racial injustices. And it hurts my heart when I hear different people that I know that this is going on. And I think to myself, okay, have I ever really had that? And I know there was, and I probably brushed over it, Rich, not mm-hmm. calling it what it was, but I know that it exists. And I think as long as there is, I think division sells.
That's true.
It sells, and as long as we can keep America divided and look at race, look at size and all like that. I mean, you look at everything. You have big feet, I have little feet or whatever. As long as people can buy into that, it's going to create division. So will we get there? I have a big question mark because I don't know. I see things that move us forward, and then I don't know if it's going to happen. And being from that standpoint, I don't know.
Deputy Chief,
you know,
I'll ask you the tough question.
Yeah, that's a tough one. When you asked that question, I thought to myself, well, this is kind of like the question we posed earlier. I don't see a finish line, right? Because if we think we're there and we think, and then society will change and we'll forget it and we'll be back right where we started. And that's what I go back to saying, we must be ever vigilant and ready to embrace anything, no matter how uncomfortable it is sometimes, right? We have to go into it openly and honestly. Do I think – so I'm not dancing around your question, but to answer your question, I don't think so, because it's kind of like saying, will we ever be able to get rid of crime and criminals? Well, you know, I would love to sit and tell you yes, but – you know, until there's a total societal reformation, you know, there's always going to be somebody that's going to have an agenda or some other ulterior motive. And history shows that, right, throughout our entire human history. So I guess my point is that we must continually stay vigilant to work towards making progress and making amends.
Yeah. Well, I like that idea of there's no finish line, because – unfortunately, I think there's some people who think we have reached a finish line, or we reached a finish line 8 years ago. And I think that's a great thought. If people want more information on all the events of the Martin Luther King commemoration, what's the easiest one-stop spot to get information?
At this point, I would tell them if they would go to our website, or they can give me a call at 918-734-1223.
Thank you very much for both joining us today, and hope a lot of people come out to the MLK commemoration
Thank
this weekend.
You.
Thank you.
Rebecca Marks Jimerson is the Martin Luther King commemoration chairperson, and Jonathan Brooks is the deputy chief of the Tulsa Police Department, discussing the events surrounding the commemoration, which began on Sunday with a march beginning at 7th in Cincinnati, marching down to Boston Avenue Methodist Church, titled The Love Conquers Hate Solidarity Walk. For a list of all the events, visit mlktulsa.com. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Colin Hines.
My wife and I made a weekend getaway to Memphis not long ago. I was counting on eating some barbecue, hanging out on Beale Street, and hearing some blues. What I hadn't anticipated was getting a crash course in empathy and being moved to the brink of tears. After breakfast, while finishing our coffee in an area close to downtown, we studied our phones to see what there was to do within walking distance. Elvis's house was too far away, so we settled on the National Civil Rights Museum at the Lorraine Hotel. Google Maps led the way as we made the five-block trek to the hotel. We rounded a corner, and there it was, the real-life, iconic motel that I had seen on TV and in books, where Martin Luther King Jr. stepped out on the second-floor balcony before taking his last breath. The museum's exhibits unfold from one space to the next, purposefully taking visitors from the beginning of slavery in America up to the post-Civil Rights era. I learned many things that day in ways that were more visceral and more moving than merely reading about those things would have been. My experience began with how Africans were captured, corralled, and stacked in boats to make the trip across the Atlantic to North America. The Africans who did make it, those who didn't die and get thrown overboard, were put on the auction block and sold as chattel. Then came plantation life, where African Americans toiled with few, if any, comforts under deplorable, inhumane conditions. Families of slaves were routinely broken up and sold to other slave owners. Walking through the museum, I kept thinking of all the African Americans who had had their children taken away from them and conveyed to the highest bidder. I thought about never being able to see my own kids again, about spending the rest of my life heartbroken and worried about them. The promise of the Emancipation Proclamation and the abolishment of slavery were, of course, joyful moments. But these moments were thwarted by the Jim Crow era and the misbegotten notion of separate but equal, where the typical African American, particularly in the South, lived in constant fear of stepping over invisible lines, knowing that horrible consequences would occur if they did cross such lines. Black Americans lived in an atmosphere where they were legally prohibited from going to white kids' schools, drinking white people's water, attending white Christians' churches, using white people's bathrooms, eating at diners intended for white patrons, or sitting in a white person's seat in the front of the bus. And voting was pretty much out of the question. In that era, which of course wasn't so long ago, African Americans knew that there was no real equal in separate but equal, and that Jim Crow meant you had to watch your every step, lest an all-white jury might find you guilty and make an example of you. Or worse yet, the KKK might show up at your door in the dead of night. By the mid-1950s, though, African Americans took to nonviolent demonstrations, actively crossing those socially accepted, invisible lines by marching where they were not supposed to march, sitting where they were not supposed to sit, and publicly saying what they were not supposed to say. For their troubles, African American men, women, and children were blown up, attacked by canines, blasted by fire hoses, ridiculed, mocked, and beaten, and arrested by all-white police forces. In the National Civil Rights Museum, there are mugshots of hundreds of African Americans who were arrested for standing up for their rights. Looking at those faces, I could both see and feel the frustration and profound suffering. Then after doing so, to hear MLK's I Have a Dream speech in its entirety was almost enough to break me up. A reservoir of sadness had been building in me since first entering the Lorraine Hotel, and by the end of my visit, I was nearly weeping. I grew up white in a culturally segregated Tulsa. I know what it is like, personally, to regard African Americans, unjustifiably, as something other and mildly threatening. I have identified the implicit bias lurking in my heart, and I understand the poisonous worldview that such a bias can foster. I know now how this bias threatens to retard my perceptions and my thinking, how it can get in the way of me knowing or recognizing another human being for who they really are. That sad and reflective walk that I took through the National Civil Rights Museum in Memphis blew my heart wide open. It gave me the clarity to see all shades of people everywhere as mixed bags of love, striving, and suffering. And in seeing this, I also see that each person is worthy of dignity and respect on an individual basis. There is, as we all know, a lot of race-related anger, frustration, and conflict going on in this country right now. More than we've seen in a half century, probably. But after my trip to Memphis, I'm convinced that there's only one way to get to a post-racist promised land, and that's on a person-by-person basis, one heart at a time.
Colin Hines is a local writer, an attorney, and a regular contributor to Studio Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.